Welcome to Traveling Inside Out. This is Alina, your host.
Bună dimineața, Andra. It's 7:46 a.m. and I am in Brooklyn. Do you remember that I also used to tell you where I was?
Yes, I do. Good morning to you. You used to tell me I'm not sure if you also told me the city, but definitely the country when you around. It is 2:47 p.m. in Romania, so good afternoon.
So welcome back from the trip. For whoever doesn't know, Andra has been on a great trip. We will find out if it was great or not, actually. She went on a tour. We talked about this in the previous episode. She went on a tour, like a book tour through Thailand, Cambodia, and Vietnam. Yeah. And so we're going to talk about your trip. But before that, I want to start with, because I always forget to do it at the end, for whoever is interested to follow Andra, have you posted anything on YouTube? It's like, it's already on Facebook. Have you posted anything?
I have not, and I created a draft. I have a draft for a short, because I have so many videos and my storage is getting full and I need to post them. I started working on it, but I haven't yet. I have been home for almost 2 weeks now, so I really should, because when you're traveling, but yes, I do have a few ideas from my travels.
I am not on Instagram anymore, but I know you still are, and you have the same name, so whoever is interested, they can follow you on Instagram as well.
I do post.
Meanwhile,
there. Yes.
Meanwhile, for myself, I have been I have been posting shorts for my trips, and I realized that I've never actually truly made proper footage from last year's trips. So I've started posting. I have a podcast. I think I have two episodes in which I'm talking about the honeymoon, the birthday trip for my husband in Las Vegas, and then the honeymoon in the Grand Canyon. So now I started posting shorts from those trips, which I know is from last year, but I haven't done that because I started the shorts summer of last year, and this is in March. So for whoever is interested, you can follow me there. That being said, I want to have the recommendation of the month. And before, I'm gonna just mention something. I have suggested a YouTube account last time of Juliet, but she also wrote a book. And I was listening to the book and I really like it. It's called Why Has Nobody Told Me This Before? And I will remind for whoever doesn't, in case that you haven't watched or listened to or remember, she's a psychologist from UK. And so the whole idea of the book is how during her therapy sessions, a lot of people are like, oh, but that sounds so easy. How come nobody has told me this before? So this was one of the questions that a lot of her clients asked her. So she decided to write a book in which she's basically just giving tips from her experience of therapist. That all makes sense. And the way that she explains is so easy to follow. So what is your recommendation?
It is also a book and also written by a woman. It is a fiction work this time. But for me, I really like it because I actually met the author. She was actually doing her master's in creative writing in the UK when I was doing my master's in documentary film. She's Australian. Her name is Holly Ringland, and she wrote this, like, her debut. She's currently working on her third novel, but like her debut novel was The Lost Flowers of Ellis Hart. And it's really nice. It's based in Australia, where Holly is from. And a lot of the stories that she told me when we met, you know, about Australia and about things about her own life, I found them later on in the book. Of course, it's all fictionalized, but it's really wonderful to to see like snippets of her personal life in there. And some things are very vulnerable, other things are, you know, fiction work, but it's really nice. It's a story about, you know, a young girl and how she basically becomes a woman in the world. But the red line of the story is really her relationship with flowers and what flowers mean to her. And, you know, how we also, like, in different countries, there are different meanings for flowers, you know, how in some, like, it, you know, different, you give a different flower for a different occasion. It's the same in this book, right? Each flower has a different meaning for Alice Hart. And, you know, in certain times of her life, she has a special relationship to some plants, and, you know, she goes back to places of her childhood and she remembers the garden that they used to have with her mother. And so it's a very nice, it's a really heartwarming story. So that's my recommendation, especially because I know the author, and that's, you know, it's rare.
That sounds really interesting.
Yeah, it was also made into a series. So I guess it's like two recommendations in one. I have not watched the series yet. It was made by Amazon, and I guess it just appeared like at the end of last year. So there you have it. In case somebody doesn't really want to read the book but wants to watch the series, they can watch it.
Have I ever told you? I don't remember. I used to have a leaf collection. So yeah, do you remember?
Yeah. I mean, I had forgotten about it, but now that you mention it, I'm like, yes, I do remember that.
Yeah, so I used to have a notebook in which I would just randomly collect the leaves like once a month or something like that, or from different trees, and I would just write my thoughts connected to the leaf and why did I choose that leaf from the ground or from I ripped it from the tree or whatever. I still have it. It's back in Romania. I should get it next time when I go to Romania. So my recommendation this time around, it's a podcast. And again, it's going to sound absurd because I'm recommending a probably very successful podcast. But in the case that some people don't know about it, that's where I'm coming from. Not of like, look at me recommending. But Julia Louis-Dreyfus has a podcast and it's called Wiser Than Me. And it's about interviewing wiser, older women that have been through life. And she says something like, women who know of one thing or two about one thing or two. So she interviews these women that obviously they've been through life. And since she's a celebrity, obviously most of them are also celebrities. So she listened to some of them. I didn't listen to all of them. I listened to some of them. The interview with Franz Lebowitz, and then, yeah, it's just so beautiful to listen women celebrating women, but also because for so long it has been considered that if a woman gets old, then that's it. And there are so many, especially in the porn industry, it's just recently that women over like 40, they're actually booking roles, or not only of a mother or a grandma or stuff like that. So I think it's a nice podcast. And I mean, I really love Julia Louis-Dreyfus. I think she's really kind but talented, and I don't know. I really, really loved it. So I'm just suggesting, in case some people don't know about it, I would really give it a listen. There you go. That being said, let's go to Thailand. So I am curious for you to tell me, obviously we're going to get in a lot of your experience, but I am curious, just to start off, would you ever book a trip like that again? Yes or no? And then we can get into the reasoning, but just yes or no. Would you do this again?
Yes. I would.
Awesome.
I would. I mean, probably not necessarily an 18 to 39 kind of age limit kind of a trip like this one was, but I would, I mean, even that one, you know, I still have a little bit of time, I guess. But I would book, yeah, I would go on another group tour like that, because yeah, like for several reasons, it was a positive experience.
Okay, so let's start with the countries. The first country that you landed in was Thailand, and you booked, you arrived like 1 day earlier than the tour started?
Yes. So the tour started on March 8th in the evening. It didn't have anything included in Bangkok, so we just met there. It only had like a one-night accommodation in Bangkok. It was like the, you know, the welcome dinner that we all went to as a group, and that's it. So I arrived the morning before, so I almost had like 2 full days in Bangkok. I had been before, so I didn't really need a lot of time. I had seen the major sites last time I was there. This time I went to places that I hadn't seen before, like Chinatown, where I also stayed this time. I went to Lumpini Park, which I hadn't seen. It's really nice, you know, in the middle of the city, but it's a very big public park. And I went for around sunset, and it was really pretty, actually. A lot of people just like jogging and dancing and whatever, just eating, having picnics there. It was pretty. I met with a friend. I have a friend from university times there. And so we spent like, I don't even know. I think we ended up spending like 4 hours in a cafe, and we just ate, and we had iced tea. It was a very nice space. She took me there. I hadn't seen it before. It was a space where some people had a workshop for painting. So they were like outside in the backyard, they were painting. Other people were just there with their dogs. Others were just, you know, inside just studying. Some students were just there like with their books, and we were just like talking for a few hours. We hadn't seen each other since 2015, so that was
When you say from university years, do you mean when you did your master in UK?
Yes. From UK. She is Thai, and Polly is her name. So we were in the same international student group together with Holly Ringland, the author that I had recommended for this month. So it all connects, right? I wasn't even actually considering it, but yeah, it connects that I'm talking about meeting this friend from Thailand and recommending Holly, who we all met in the same context. And then I took a free guided tour in Bangkok in the old town. So this wasn't part of the actual trip, right, with the company that I had booked. This was like a, you know, one of those free guided tours, but it was good to have a morning to just walk around and find out more about the old town. And then, yeah, I had lunch, and I guess, yeah, in the afternoon, I went back to the hotel, and around 6, we met with the group and with our guide. So that was, those were basically 2 days in Bangkok that I had. And the early morning next day, we took off to Cambodia to cross the border.
I know you said that it was really hot and humid, and I can only imagine. So how did you, after the initial shock, how did you adjust to the time zone and basically the difference in the temperature, the climate, the whole climate was different.
Whenever I go to a really hot place, I always carry a lot of water with me. So I'll have my refillable bottle, and then I also buy probably a second one to keep it cool, because like sweating a lot, you just, dehydration is a huge problem. Other than that, I was, you know, we were all constantly just hot and sweaty and clammy, and everybody was like, oh my God, this is so hot. But it was like, you know, in Celsius, it was 34, 36 Celsius. Humidity was like 76%. So it was hard compared to, you know, Europe, where I had come from, where it was basically still winter. So that's, you know, there's not much you can do yet. Just drink a lot of water, and not just water. If you can have some electrolytes with it, or, you know, like coconut water,
Coconut water. It's what I used to have in South America a lot. Okay, so you finally made it to Cambodia.
Yeah.
Bucket list checked. First, tell me, how many days were Cambodia total?
How many days? So the whole tour was 10 days. In Cambodia, we were there for like 7 days and a half, okay. I think. So the biggest part was Cambodia for sure.
So a week spent in Cambodia. Okay.
Yep.
So how was it? First time when you arrived, you were like, this is happening. This is happening.
Yeah, it was very interesting. Well, first of all, our tour guide, he is Cambodian, so it was, you know, it was very good to have him. Yeah. He had done this many times. He does tours of Thailand and Vietnam and Laos. But yeah, he is Cambodian, so it was very reassuring to have him with us because, you know, he knew a lot about everything. So we were all super relieved that, yeah, he knows the borders, customs and everything else, like how to, you know, like which line we should go to, like he, you know, the visa, is it good, is it not good, things like that. I needed to apply. Most of the people in the group were British and then some of them were German, and only like 3 or 4 of us were other nationalities. And we had to apply for the Cambodian visa in advance. But yeah, like basically everybody else was just like, yeah, visa on arrival, I think. So for them, it was easy.
Yeah.
But so we took a minibus from Thailand and we were taken to the Cambodian border where we stopped and we took our bags and then we crossed on foot. And then, on the other side of the border, we were taken by another minibus to drive into the first, destination on the list, to Siem Reap. It was actually faster at the border crossing than we were expecting. And, you know, they had AC inside. It was a nice building. Everybody was like, oh, this is great. Right next to the border in Cambodia, there are a lot of casinos and, you know, people from like Thailand, they cross because in Thailand they're not legal, I think. And then they cross into Cambodia to just like, you know, gamble.
That's
and then
an
they
interesting fact.
Yeah, it was the same at the border crossing with Vietnam, because also in Vietnam they're not legal, so like right before the border you see like many casinos, like huge, and then cows walking around and people on scooters and with babies and things like that. It's very colorful, I have to say. But yeah, so we entered and we exited Cambodia on foot, which was, yeah, it was pretty, yeah, like we had to take our bags, we had to wait for a little bit, but it wasn't as long as I had expected, so yeah, that was pretty good. The first stop on in Cambodia was Siem Reap, which is basically the gateway to Angkor Wat, you know, the big temple. Whoever wants to visit that, it's basically on the outskirts of Siem Reap. And I really liked Siem Reap because it's a very, the atmosphere there, the vibe is, even though it's touristic and there's many tourists around, it's very laid back and it's chill. And it's, you know, they have a river and you can eat by the river and there's lights and there's, the traffic is not so horrible like in the bigger cities, because this one is kind of smaller. And we had accommodation in a smaller hotel that also had a pool, so that was really good because Cambodia is also very dusty, and especially, well, it was a dry season, but also they have a lot of construction going on, especially like infrastructure, like roads. And we got so dusty, all of us. We were so sweaty and dusty and everything. So when we got there, it was so blessing to have the pool. It was small, but yeah, it was very good. Yeah. So then, yeah, you can ask me.
Yeah. I just wanted to ask if so when you arrived in Cambodia, because I didn't understand. So you arrived in Cambodia, you went to the first, so you already started, like you entered Cambodia and then you actually started seeing places, right? Is this what you said? I'm sorry.
No, it's no. I didn't fully explain it. So yeah, like the road, that the entire trip from Bangkok, we started like 5 in the morning, and with the border crossing and everything else, we arrived probably after like 9 hours at our accommodation. We had some time, to we didn't we ate on the way somewhere, and we just basically had some time to like cool off in the pool, and then we went to have dinner and have some drinks. There is in Siem Reap, there's this like pub street where there's all the bars and rooftop bars and things like that and restaurants. So we all went there, we had some food, and basically we went to sleep quite early because the next day we were supposed to go and visit the Angkor Wat, which is like the complex. The temple complex is pretty big. There's actually several temples around there that you can visit. So what they do in these organized tours is that they take you to the Angkor Wat early in the morning for the sunrise view, because supposedly it's really pretty if the weather's nice. We saw the sun for a little bit, but it was kind of cloudy, so it wasn't like, it was still beautiful, but the pictures that they showed us, like from some days when it's really the sky is really clear, it's beautiful colors and everything. But yeah, like at 5 in the morning we had to be there, because we had to like wait in line to get our tickets, and then we had to go to the complex. So the first day when we arrived in Cambodia, it wasn't really, it was just like eating, having some drinks, and basically, yeah,
So
having some.
then, so now I'm curious, did it live up to the hype? Because it's literally the only place that I know of from Cambodia.
It did. I must admit it did. But I also have to admit that I was a little bit I didn't do a lot of research, and I thought, how I knew that the Tomb Raider movie, the first one, was shot in Cambodia, and I always thought, oh, that's the Angkor Wat, because it has those, like, at some point, Lara Croft, right, the character, she goes to this like temple, and there's like the big trees growing over the ruins, and it's amazing, and I'm like, oh my God, that's Angkor Wat, right? And I go to the Angkor Wat and it's not that. And like they say, oh, the Tomb Raider temple, that's a different one. And I'm like, oh, okay. Because yeah, obviously, like me,
This
like a
sounds
tourist,
it sounds a little bit like in Mario. I'm sorry, Mario, the princess is another castle.
Yes,
But
literally,
I
yeah.
have to say, just to make a point, I think there's always things like this. I can give you an example. So number one, the first one that comes to mind is the fountain from France, from Central Park. That's not the fountain in Central Park, is not the one from France. The one in France was like an actual, it was shot in California. Like it's not the real thing. Number two, when you went to the middle of the middle of the earth, that is considered in Ecuador, being on the equatorial line, like in between the two main lines, you go there and then it's like a whole museum and all of that, but then they are telling you actually the actual thing, it's not here, because it was miscalculated. So you have to grab a taxi if you want to see the actual thing. So what I'm saying is that these kind of things are, I think, all over the place when it's like the big thing, and then you're like, oh wait, the thing is actually over there. So yeah. But it's kind of funny. It's kind of funny that
It
you, for whoever doesn't remember, Andra mentioned in the previous episode that she was a big fan of Tomb Raider. So it's funny that you did not know. But now
is.
you do. But
Yeah,
now you do.
I do feel actually quite stupid that I didn't. I somehow just assumed that it was, yeah, shot. Obviously, it was shot at the Angkor Wat. But the good part is that we were actually taken to the Tomb Raider temple as well. So I also saw that, and I have to admit, it is my favorite temple because like the Angkor Wat is amazing. It's beautiful. It's big. It's super intricate. It has like it's almost 1,000 years old, and it still has like little engravings, tiny details. It's so beautiful, really. And it's huge. And the way it is built, it has basically like two layers made of different kind of stones, and one is I think lateris, which is kind of like reddish, and on the top layer on the outside is sandstone, I think, which is a bit brighter. And the guide was telling us how that also helps structurally, like it's almost like an engineering thing because it makes it, that's why it's still standing after almost 1,000 years. But it also like symbolically, it's like the skin and the muscles underneath, because you know they wanted it to make it like a like almost like a living offering for the gods. So it's super impressive. I loved it a lot. But then we were taken to another smaller temple that was basically built, I cannot remember the name of it, but it was basically built with like whatever leftover stones there were from the Angkor Wat, they built this one with. And because the stones are smaller, it has a very interesting appearance to it, almost like a sandcastle. And then the third one that we saw was Taprom Temple, which is really the one where the Tomb Raider movie was shot. And that's where the big trees are growing on top of like the structures and how they're kind of embracing the ruins. And that one is really impressive. It's smaller, but because of those trees that are so incredible there, they're basically just like the roots are kind of like fingers in between the stones. It's very, you know, it's amazing. So I really did like the fact that they are two separate temples because I got to see two really interesting things. So it was a full day. Like I said, it started at sunrise. Before sunrise, a little bit, we had breakfast there. The breakfast is, you know, very basic. It's like two boiled eggs and one slice of bread. And I don't think we were given anything else. But yeah, and then, you know, seeing two other temples, walking around. So it was, we finished basically in the afternoon, and we again went for dinner, and the next day again we left. So we had two nights there, but one full day to visit the temples.
I guess we can get into that in the next episode, but I'm just curious, were you part of the group or you had times for you to explore by yourself? Like, were you always there with the group? Visiting the temples?
Visiting the temples, we had a local guide. So, you know, somebody who was registered to give guidance for that specific place. But they, you know, they gave us like 10-15 minutes in some places to just walk around, take pictures on our own if we wanted to. But for the most part, we were with the group. But yeah, like at some point, the guide said, okay, like you can roam around for 10-15 minutes. I'll meet you back here in 15 minutes. So yeah, it's a little bit of both.
So then the next day,
The next day
for the island.
Oh yes. The next day we went to the capital city. We drove to Phnom Penh, which was again a pretty long driving day. The problem with these countries, especially in, you know, in Southeast Asia and in South Asia, is that the distances are not huge, but because the conditions of the roads and the traffic are not great, you spend a lot of time just driving from one place to the other. But it was, I have to admit, it was pretty well done because our guide had us stop in, you know, several smaller places. So on the way to the capital city, even though, again, it took like nine hours or whatever, sure, we stopped for lunch, and then we stopped at a place. I don't actually remember where it was. It was like a smaller town that's known for, you know, in that area, there's a lot of tarantulas. And, basically there's like a big parking lot where they just people just sell deep fried tarantulas, and you can just buy them as snacks and eat. And I mean, I didn't try any, but you know, like people in the group, they just stopped and they tasted deep fried tarantulas, and they were like, "Oh, it's actually not too bad. It tastes like chips or crisps," because they were British. You know, like the guide, our guide Kim, he was telling us how, you know, back in the day during the war, during, you know, the Khmer Rouge times, people were super hungry. They had nothing to eat. And they could basically, they had to resort to eating whatever they could find. And that was also tarantulas. But now tarantulas are seen kind of like this delicacy, this like fancy snack, because you don't eat it all the time. It's just like, you know, when you drive around that area and you find, you stop just for a snack. The scary part was that there were all these like little kids just having like tarantulas in their hand. And the guide told us that we want to avoid those kids, because they come and they put the tarantulas on you, and then they ask for money to like remove it. And we were all like hysterical. Like, I don't think I've ever seen groups of tourists run away from kids before, but like as soon as you saw a kid approach you, everybody was like, right, but like you could see the tarantulas in their hands, and that was it was a little bit scary. But nobody, you know, no, but our guide also did tell the kids like, don't do this, not here, no, don't do it with these guys, don't put the spiders on them. But you know, it was something interesting to see. And then on later on, we also stopped in another place that was doing like grilled sticky rice in bamboo. So like, you know, they stuff bamboo, empty bamboo pieces with sticky rice, and they grill it, and you know, and they mix it with coconut, and then they grill it, and it tastes really interesting. So we saw how that is manufactured. So you know, the trip itself did not seem so long, because we got to see this little interesting things. And then we made it to the capital city, to Phnom Penh, and again we just went for like a little orientation walk, where the guide was showing us the main parts of the town, of the city. And then dinner, and that was basically it for that day. Okay. The next day,
may I interrupt you?
Yeah.
That's where my tour would have ended, because I hate spiders. And I am doing better than how I used to be in the past, but I still hate spiders. And I've been in the Amazonian jungle. In Ecuador. So there were, I remember, we went on a boat, just on the boat on the river. So we went on a boat tour, and then we stopped on one of the islands on the river. And so I cannot remember. It was just one night or two nights. I think it was just one night. I really cannot remember. I think it was just one. So then one night, there was a tarantula that was like high up on the ceiling of the place where we were supposed to have dinner. And I was like, everybody was like, "Oh, that's so cool, ha, 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 ha." And I was like, I'm gonna watch it the whole time, because it's above us, and what if it's jumping at us? It was like terrifying. And again, nothing happened and so on. So the idea of like somebody, like I would probably go to jail, because I don't know, but I would probably kick or punch that kid. So most likely that's where my trip would have ended. I just wanted to mention that.
Well, if you really wanted to, you could stay in the bus. You didn't have to get off. It was just like a 10-minute stop, you know, whoever wanted to go to the restroom, whoever wanted to taste the tarantula, because that's, you know, either go to the bathroom, taste the tarantula, whatever. But
however, I also want to mention, when I went to Morocco with my mom, and we went to the small Sahara, we didn't go in the actual Sahara, but it was like some dunes before the actual desert. There were some people that they would have... Not spiders, obviously. Scorpions, like tiny scorpions. And then if you want to you know, they would kind of, like, they wouldn't force it on you, but they would be, you know, I don't, like, it's very common that they are very pushy in those, in that part of the world, the sellers are very pushy. So they were kind of, so I have pictures of two small scorpions on my hand. And I think, I don't know if we gave money, because I think that was the point. They're going to put the scorpions in your hand and then they're going to ask for money. I don't remember if we actually gave them any money. I don't think we did. But yeah, I guess it's a thing that people do. And I also remember a friend of mine that she went to Madagascar, I think. And there they she had like a
like crabs.
Yeah, probably crabs. So they she had pictures of her being very uncomfortable with some. I'm like, I'm pretty sure this is just people taking advantage of this in one way or another. My alarm got off because I'm supposed to, like, I have an alarm that I'm always waking up way before still that. Anyway, so that's I just wanted to do that. But let's continue with the next day.
The next day we, let me think, we had, so we had almost, a full day to explore Phnom Penh. We had in the morning, there was like an optional activity. So it wasn't included, but whoever wanted to could join, and everybody in the group ended up, deciding to go for it. So we went to see this like memorial for the victims of the Khmer Rouge regime and the prisons and the killing fields. So basically, you know, what the communists did to their own people. And it was, you know, it was tough to process. There were, you know, you could see like the mass graves, a memorial full of skulls and bones and skulls of babies, and there were explanations on how the babies were basically like murdered and what the Khmer Rouge said about that and why, you know, it was definitely, it's a piece of history that you see once, you go to see once in your lifetime, because you know, it needs to be known, just like other parts, like the Auschwitz, and, you know, also in Romania we have like the communist prisons and the former communist prisons, and it's something that you should see. But it was definitely not easy. Everybody was at the end of that, like, you know, after, in the afternoon, we were all kind of it was a bit, yeah, it was tough to process. And we had all kind of known that, you know, it was going to be that, because we knew and we were told about the horrors of this regime. And basically, out of 17 million people in a very short amount of time, like, I guess under 2 years or so, or under 3 years, they killed 3 million of their own people. So, yeah. It was something else. But yeah, it was necessary basically to see that as well.
I want to mention something here, because a lot of people say that this is part of history and should be shown, because it's important to learn from the history, but current events seem that people don't care. The ones in charge are still don't care. And it's so sad that, do you remember, did you say when was that?
I think it ended like around 40 years ago. So it was not very long, recent.
So I think, yeah. So throughout history, we have in so many countries when there are unfortunately places where you are reminded of a huge tragedy, and yet current events show that we're still not learning.
Yeah, I mean, I guess that's why it was not included in the trip necessarily. Whoever wanted to go, we had to pay extra and everybody ended up going. And I guess it's because it's so easy to forget the horrors when you have it good. And yeah, like these a couple of people from Germany, they said, like, well, actually, yeah, in Germany it's happening the same. Like, people who used to live in communist Germany, like some of them are like, yeah, it wasn't so bad back then, because they got time erases that. Yeah, so I think you're right. I think that's why people need to see this, and especially young people, so that ideally so that we don't repeat these. But yeah, like, things, terrible things are happening right now as we speak, and nobody's doing anything, so at least we can acknowledge, I guess, the victims. But there were many groups there. There were a lot of people. There were and a lot of stories. What was really impressive to me, and what I really appreciated in this tour, was that our guide, he told us a lot of stories from his personal life, right? Like, during Khmer Rouge times, he lost two siblings, one of them because of famine, and the other one because she got sick and there were no doctors to treat anybody. So yeah, like, he lost two siblings back in the day, like, and then he was telling us stories about how, because there were so many like guns and weapons left everywhere, when he was a kid he used to go fishing with hand grenades. And one time, like, they would just basically throw a grenade in the pond, and then they would just go and collect the fish that were dead after the explosion. And one time, one of his friends, when he was like 10, another friend of his, like, he went fishing with hand grenades and he didn't like throw it in time, and he just basically died. And he was like, oh, I guess, it was a normal thing for somebody to just die when they go fishing. And like, so many stories like that, and it was really interesting to hear him talk about these things, right? After that was like a whole afternoon, a whole morning until the afternoon that we did that, and after that we had a bit of time to just explore Phnom Penh by ourselves. We went out, I walked around to take some pictures, basically, and then we all met for dinner, and that was it. That was time in the capital. And then early in the morning the next day, that was day five, I guess, I can't fully remember, but I think so. And then we again early in the morning drove to the coast to get the boat to get to the island, to make the transition to like happier topics. Cambodia, I had heard from like a friend who had been to Cambodia before that Cambodia has nice beaches. And this tour had two nights on an island. And I was, I was excited about that because I really wanted to see what the beaches are like there. The good part is that, we went to Korong Island, which is smaller. It's closer to Sihanoukville, so that's the town where we boarded the boat. The island itself, there's not too much on it. There's like, a few small villages, and it's beautiful. It has white sands, turquoise beach waters. There's obviously trash that the water brings, because this is the new reality now, but it was beautiful. The good part is that because not too many people come to Cambodia for the beach, it really wasn't crowded at all. So, most people go to Thailand if they want a good beach, but not so much in Cambodia. And so there were like, free sun beds that you could just use, no charges. There were, I guess, where we were, there were just a few other, there were like two or three hostels, basically. And it was us and then a few other tourists. So at some point our group just like sat on the beach somewhere and we got in the water. It was really just us in the water, no other tourists around. So it was really nice. And in the evening we went further out, you know, like, cause there was a little harbor and we went a bit further away from the pier and we could see some, bioluminescent plankton, which was really nice. Like you can't really see it, like, you know, in the Maldives where you have pictures of like almost like stars in the water. But when you got in the water and you swim a little bit, you can see like little sparkles in the water, which was, it was very nice. It's like magical. So that was like the highlight of the island. And so, yeah, we had a full day the next day we had a full day to just like, you know, chill. The internet was terrible there obviously, but it was, it's not such a big problem. There were a few food places. We had like coconut and mango and pineapple juice. So basically, we had some time to chill. So yeah, one morning I did a little meditation session with a few people in the group. I said I was going to do my meditation on the beach and like a few others were like, oh yeah, can you teach us? Cause we would, you know, we wanted to do it. So yeah, we spent an hour together and I did a bit of guided meditation. It was actually, I really enjoyed doing that. So it was very nice. And they said it was really good for them. Actually, one of the girls, she said, oh, it was so good for me. At some point I fell asleep. I had the most restful sleep ever. We had been also very tired, all of us, because of the heat, because of waking up early, you know, long travel days. So that was good. You know, after a full day on the island, again, after breakfast, the following day, we took the boat back and then we got back to the mainland. And from the mainland, we were taken with a minibus to kind of closer to the border with Vietnam, to a small village in the Cham Bok area. And yeah. The idea here is... Actually, I forgot to mention one thing, but I will say it now. So in Cham Bok, there is like a little association to help the local community. And G Adventures, the company that I had booked this tour with, they worked with that association to kind of bring more tourists in the area. And the area is really nice because it has this... this canyon, like the Cham Bok Canyon, is actually, it's a very interesting place. It's not very big, but it has these like clay formations that the rain just models basically. And it's super interesting. It's like they really do look like sand castles and little pyramids and things like that. So it looks, it is like a canyon, but it is made of clay. So every time it rains, the scenery changes a little bit. It's super, super interesting. And the textures there, it's really, yeah, like all created by the water. The patterns are very, like, there's little, like, it's like little mountains, basically. And they want to bring more tourists to the area. And so the way to do it is they bring these groups and we slept at basically at like, we did a homestay. So we slept at people's homes, right? A lot of people there, they have like either a guest house or a guest room in their house, basically. And we were split into smaller groups and we were five girls and we all slept in one room of one of these like guest houses. So basically it was with a family. The family was living in a small house and by the house, they had like another house where they had like rooms for guests. That, you know, they had like, there was no bathroom. They had an outhouse. There was no running water. There was just like a, you know, a big tank that they used to fill with water so you can wash up. That's, you know, like basic condition, living conditions. But you know, for us, it was interesting to see how the locals live in a village, and for them, it helps them because, you know, they get paid and, you know, each group, like every time the groups sleep in a different house, so everybody gets to interact with the tourists, everybody gets a bit of money, and so on. We also ate at a place, like it's a restaurant in the forest, in the same village, but also like local women take turns to come and cook for the tourists. So there's not like, you don't really get a menu, right? They call in advance, and yeah, our guide just basically said we have, you know, 13 people, 2 are vegan, 4 are vegetarian, and the rest eat meat. So basically they just cooked several dishes for us, and we were just brought, you know, based on our diets, we were brought food. It was really good. We had like some really nice curry. And what I wanted to mention again, because I really like how G Adventures, and this is not a sponsored thing, obviously, because I paid for my trip. Nobody sponsors anything. But I do want to mention this because I think it's a really nice touch that they have these like this social aspect. So first of all, it was this like homestay. And the second part, it was in Siem Reap, where we went to a restaurant that's called, I think, Hope for Cambodia. And this is also part of an organization that wants to empower like young people and youth. So they get donations, and like the profits they made from the restaurant, they use to, they created a private school basically. And the really young kids, they learn whatever they learn in school, right? English and math and whatever. But as they grow up, they are trained in like hospitality, and they are brought to work in the restaurant. So they are trained to work in the kitchen. They are trained to work as like, you know, waiters and staff. So they are, because these kids come from really poor communities, like from the slums, and you know, otherwise they would probably resort to begging, to stealing, to whatever. So they are brought, and they are given education, they are given some training, a job, and that you know, this is how they, it's a social business, right? And so we were taken there. Again, the food was really nice, and we were all super happy to be there, to you know, to be able to support somehow. So we really did enjoy this part of the trip that, you know, we felt like, and we were told like, this is how it's making a difference. This much of the profit that this business is making where we are right now is going to educating the kids and so on. So we all appreciated that. Yeah, that was basically the last night in Cambodia. We were there for, yeah, I guess like 8 nights. And then the next morning, we again were taken by a minibus to the border with Vietnam.
Okay, I think this is all for now. And I think we're going to touch Vietnam in the next episode. That being said, I'm going to end the episode right now. And then we're going to talk about Vietnam, and I have more general questions for you about the whole trip in the next episode. So if you have anything else you want to add, move it.
Yeah, we'll add it in the next episode then.
I'm not in my best shape or form. Anyway, thank you for making the time again, and I'm gonna see you then.
This concludes today's episode. Thank you for listening and for reviewing Traveling Inside Out. If you want to get in touch with me, send an email to podcast@alinaigrad.com. And remember, your outer journey begins with inner work. Until next time, bye.